Did you find out?
Yes, it'll be totally cool at the very
okay.
end.
All right.
Okay.
At the end. Okay, fine.
Yep.
Oh, I'm good, so
yeah, no.
Let me make sure I didn't. I also went online and tried to stay up, but I got bumped off of the website. I tried to leave it up, you know, all morning, and then
yeah.
an hour ago I bumped in, and I lost it again. So
yeah, it may have timed out. So
oh, okay. I'm going to
just
move around
refresh
in case it's motion sensitive or anything.
Yeah.
All right.
No, if it's on the browser itself, just all you have to do is
yeah. I'm back in.
Browser.
I'm just going to move around. So when you're ready to start, just say, okay, we're starting, and I'll just stay in one place.
Yep. Gotcha.
Okay, good. It looks great, doesn't it?
It does.
Mm. Happy us. A lot of slides. I hope I get through everything. I probably should. So
everyone.
Now the question was, we're going to finish at 3 and with a few minutes for questions and answers, correct?
Yeah, we'll have about 15 minutes.
All right, fine. So
everything that all the navigation that you're doing right now,
yeah.
Just keep in mind, everyone can see that right now.
At this moment? Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I'll stay put.
So you might be causing people to have, epileptic seizures.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't log off because of a lack of movement. I was thinking sometimes, if you don't move, the thing just freezes.
Yeah.
I didn't want
now
to get locked out.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay. So they can see where we are already. Okay, fine.
Yep.
And you'll flash any questions if I miss them.
I will. I'll prompt you.
And if nobody answers, answer.
They don't? Yeah. I'll just use a fake voice.
I love it. You can type in. They don't know who it is.
No, they'll know it was me.
It's you.
Yeah.
You should use.
But we've got some pretty innovative things that we're developing for this.
Oh, good.
For the webinar. So
yeah, you need that stuff.
Definitely.
Well, I have 2:00 sharp.
Yeah, we'll wait for the conferencing center to merge us, and then.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll be live.
Okay. Are we ready then?
Yes.
And on cue.
Okay, great. I'll go ahead and merge the two rooms. You're gonna hear you're gonna hear silence for a moment, and then I'll go ahead and say, Dan, the floor is yours.
Sounds good.
It's okay, great. And both lines are open, so anything said from this point on will be heard, okay?
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ready, Margo?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
I know. I felt like you. Are we there?
I know.
Dan, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, Street Smart Advertising, How to Win the Battle of the Buzz, presented by Margo Berman. How are you doing today, Margo?
Good. I'm fine. Thanks, Dan.
Awesome. I'm Dan Reynolds here at Everything CU in Holyoke, Mass., and it's great to see everybody here today. If everyone wants to just type in a quick comment in the message box there just saying hi, that would be great as I type away. I see Matt Taggart, my coworkers, has logged in and said hi. Before we begin, I want to just quickly go over what everybody's looking at here, the interface. You'll see more toward the right-hand side, a little raise hand icon. Today's presentation is going to be really interactive, so Margo definitely wants any kind of feedback from you all. And if you have any questions or comments, you can either raise your hand and I'll call on you, or just simply type in a message in the comments questions box. And I know for some folks that can be a little bit of an annoyance. So just simply disable chat, that little button on the middle section of what you see on the interface. You hit that disable chat, and you won't see any of that streaming text that'll be rolling through. Also, you'll see an attendee list. Currently, I see about 20 credit union folks, and that's awesome. If you just mouse over their name, you'll get more information about who they are and where they're from and a little bit more information about who they are. Also, at the very end of the webinar, we will have an open Q&A. It'll be about 15 minutes, so if everyone can stay in and hang on, that'll be great. Answer and field more questions that you might have toward the end. And we also ask that you hit the quick survey, the exit webinar button. That'll take you to a survey, and we want to know feedback from you and any other kind of feedback that you had for today's webinar. I'm going to introduce Margo. Margo Berman has been a marketing consultant for 20 years. With her own ad and PR agency, Global Impact, for more than 17 years. As a creative talent, she's won numerous regional, national, and international awards with clients like American Express, Alamo Rent-A-Car, Clientele, and Banana Boat. She's been honored with many personal awards, including the Outstanding Community Service Award from Child Hope, Chapter Headliner of the Year, National Student Chapter Advisor from the Association of Women in Communications, and received the 2007 Dean's Award for Outstanding Faculty Member in Advertising and PR. Margo, I'm sure you're ready to get started.
I'm ready.
And I'm going to hand it off to you. The webinar is all yours.
Welcome, everybody. Today we're going to talk about street smart advertising. It's one thing to be smart, but it's another thing to be street smart. And today you really need to have your ear to the pavement to see what's happening in the market today. It's completely different than it's been in the last 20 years. So in looking at what you need to do and how to develop a new message that's effective, think about being original. Think about how can you surprise your audience, both with your message and the media that you use. Now, with the message, I'm talking about what you're saying. And when I say the message should be innovative, think of a way that you can speak to your audience in a tone of voice that they can respond to with a message that's relevant to the audience. And before we started, we were talking about the, I believe it's T-Mobile, TV commercials, where there's the little girl is text messaging, and they're talking about her BFF, Jill, her best friend, Forever Jill, and she's at the end, her mom is saying she's going to take her phone away, and she goes, T-I-S-N-F, that is so not fair, and the mom gets all scrambled trying to answer her, because that's her language. Text messaging is her language, the message for the young kids, and moms are trying to keep up with that. So the media, being a TV commercial, and everyone, so many people are TiVoing or fast-forwarding through commercials, that commercial aired on American Idol, where most of the audience really sits through the commercial, and they're watching live, so they don't want to miss any of it, so they tend to be on board. So that media and that particular selection of American Idol for that audience, for a young mom with a teenage daughter, or a young preteen daughter, is very, very powerful because they're going to be there watching. You know the audience is huge on that. So the next thing, aside from being original, I invite you to be unique. What you need to do is say what sets you apart. So think about how your company, firm, service, product, whatever it is you're offering, is different from all the others. And you say, well, you know, we all do the same thing. Well, if you say you all do the same thing, I invite you to think about Bayer aspirin. When the research came forth that Bayer aspirin jumped on this research ahead of every other aspirin company, and the research showed that if you're having a heart attack and you take an aspirin, it can save your life, and that's a fact. So if you see someone struggling with chest pains, give them an aspirin. Well, because Bayer aspirin was the first to say, take it for pain, take it for life. A lot of people think you have to buy Bayer aspirin, and only Bayer aspirin will save your life. What they did was grabbed on to what was unique about aspirin, which is the ability to save your life during a heart attack. The other aspirin companies didn't think about it. Now, it's not ibuprofen, it's not Tylenol, it has to be an actual aspirin. So what they did was grab that line and grab that research and claimed it for themselves. Absolutely brilliant. So it made it seem like Bayer aspirin was the only thing that could save your life. So in creating their sticky slogan, which is what they did, take it for pain, take it for life, that particular type of a slogan is the use of parallel construction. And we had a different session where we talked about the different techniques. It was mental peanut butter, and we discussed some of the different techniques that people use to create advertising messages that are very sticky. So that's a very strong message that Bayer aspirin claims, and that's something that set them apart from other pain relievers. In looking at what else you can do, I invite you to be extremely observant. Know who your target audience is and know everything you can find out about your target audience. The Mitchum Man, which was created by Deutsche Advertising, did observational research. Now, yes, people still do focus groups, and yes, companies still do mall interceptions and ask you questions and do surveys and send you direct mail questionnaires. But today, one of the most powerful means of gathering information about your target audience is observational research, and that is where the advertiser goes in. You know, the agency goes in, the research company goes in to the target audience's home, actually where they live, and looks around. I mean, they're invited in, of course, and the end user, the consumer, says, oh, sure, you can come over. Now, if the end user says something like, oh, I really like to sit down to a nice dinner, and I like to, you know, have everything look beautiful when I have the table set, and they go into the home, and they see mismatched plates, chipped glassware, cups that don't match, they know that what they're saying and what they do are two different things. And proof of that is when they ask questionnaires and they ask you questions in focus groups, what is your favorite magazine to read or favorite daily publication to read? Or most people say, oh, you know, or favorite monthly publication or weekly publication. Most people say Time, they say Newsweek. But the number one selling publication with over 2.5 million readers a day is National Enquirer. But you're not going to say that. You don't want to say you read National Enquirer. You want to look good to the question asking the person asking the question. You want to represent yourself and look like, oh, well, you know, I read all the business publications and the news publications. But the fact is that who are all these people buying National Enquirer? They're people who are answering these questions, and they're not lying. They just don't want to reveal exactly what it is that they do. So the beauty of observational research is you can't hide the truth. I mean, if you say you like a very tidy house and the house is a wreck, then they know that, well, okay, that's not a priority of yours. So in looking to develop a message for the Mitchum man, they went into the home of the young metrosexual guy. That's the guy who used to be called narcissism, the guy that's, you know, in love with himself. He loves what he looks like. He cares about the way he appears. He cares about what he wears. And they wanted to get some insight into this person. And by doing observational research, they were able to do that. So the beauty of observational research is you learn where the audience is, which leads us to media intersection, because you can't reach them if you don't know where they are. And the way to find out where they are is observing them and asking questions when you're there. So where is your audience? Where do they work? Where do they play? Where do they shop? Where do they hang out? Where do they surf the web? And if you can find out where they are, you'll be able to catch them mid-stride in the middle of their day when they don't expect it. So you'd be able to catch them wherever it is that they are. So they found out that the Mitchum man is a young guy, probably, you know, late 20s, early 30s, who's probably now in mid-management. He might have a second car. He might be starting a family. He does go out with his friends. And some of them are still single, and they found out that this guy likes to still have a good time and likes to enjoy himself, even though he's now moving down the line for maturity, moving into his next phase of life. So what they did was they said, well, when they're out with their friends, here's something. We'll go to the lounges, the bars where they are, and they'll put coasters out. And the coasters will say things like, if you let your buddy have the hot one, you're a Mitchum man. And on the matchbook, it would say if you're using this to write a phone number, you're a Mitchum man. So what they did was they spoke in the language of the young, cool guy who's very interested in, you know, helping his buddies out, and he's a good, dear friend. And yet when he goes out, you know, he understands who he is and what he is he's trying to do, and they wanted to reach this audience. So where did they reach him? In clubs. I also noticed they had bus wraps. I was at a conference in San Francisco, and a huge bus went by. And you want to talk about appropriate tone of voice, reaching the audience out and about. The message on the bus said, if you could totally park this baby, you're a Mitchum man. And just the language of totally park this baby speaks to a guy in his own voice. And they had in Maxim magazine, which is media-specific advertising, where it's in a specific publication where your audience would be found, and it wasn't everywhere, just Maxim, and they had a close-up of a low-cut blouse and a cleavage showing, and the headline read, if they look real enough to you, you're a Mitchum man. So the question really being, they didn't run that, of course, in New York, the New Yorker, or in the New York Times, or in Business Week, but they ran it in Maxim magazine, the publication where their audience would be reading. So mostly the guys would be reading it. It wouldn't be offensive to women. So in looking at how they have messages that are interruptive, they catch the reader, the specific target audience, in a message that's relevant, in media-specific advertising, and an appropriate tone of voice. And that's what made that campaign so powerful. that were not just interactive, intrusive, they're also interactive. So campaigns that are very, very successful are highly interactive campaigns. So how could a campaign be interactive? Well, you know, that the big thing today is engagement. If you can engage your audience and involve your audience and have them participate in some way with you, like if you go to the Coke website, that you can shoot a video and send in your video. Dove, the Real Beauty campaign, invited people to shoot videos of themselves and create ads and TV commercials, which did air on the Oscars. And I aired on TV on the Oscars, and because that's a highly female-viewed show, as opposed to Super Bowl, which is more of a mixed audience, the Oscars is highly viewed by women because of the fashion. So Dove, which the campaign is the Real Beauty campaign, women of all sizes, they invited their audience to create commercials showing use of Dove. And these, some of them, of course, were film students, you know, filmmaking students, and the commercials were excellent, even the Everyday People commercials that were not film students. And they aired on the Oscars. So if you had seen the Oscars, a lot of the Dove commercials you saw that night were shot by Everyday People. And so they engage the audience. Tell us what you think about our product, and you create the content. So being interactive, that allows the audience to engage and involve with the product, Burger King created the subservient chicken. And it was Crispin Porter Bogusky, that the advertising agency in Miami, that created this campaign. And if you haven't seen it, go to www.subservientchicken.com. And most people spend about 3.5 minutes online on a site. Well, this campaign and this particular website is so engaging that the average person spends 7 minutes and 35 seconds per visit. And what's on this site that allows people and encourages people to spend so long? It's a guy dressed in a chicken costume who will do whatever you type in. So if you type in jump up and down, the chicken jumps up and down. If you type in turn in a circle, the chicken turns in a circle. If you type in wave your hand or wing, he'll wave his wing. And if you type in something naughty, he'll wave his finger, he'll wave his wing like he's waving his finger, no, no. It's so funny. Well, it's very, very engaging. And over 348 million hits in just a year and a half, plus 12,142,314 unique visitors in just 18 months. So this launched in April. It was just a joke. It was just one guy sending it to another guy like, hey, here's a fun idea. And that took off and it became viral. And one person emailed another person, emailed another person, and before you knew it, it just became a campaign. Now a lot of these things happen to show up on YouTube, and if you can get a commercial or an interactive or a viral video up on YouTube, it's seen and it's practically free. I mean, just whatever you cost was to shoot it, you're not paying for airtime. So if you can be interactive and engage your audience, it's a very, very powerful mechanism today. So be exciting, create a buzz, and help people spread the message. And as we mentioned, if you go to YouTube, viral videos are there. And if you haven't typed in, which is really, really funny, Simon Says, S-I-M-O-N-S-E-Z, look for Simon Says. It's just a home video of a guy with his family and his little dog, and they all play Simon Says, and it's just very funny. I don't want to ruin it. You can also type in Scuba Cat videos and look up Google Scuba Cat, either on YouTube or on Google, and you'll find the funniest videos. And these become viral because people send them one to the other. If your video could be product-related and be very clever and engaging, it too will become a viral video because it's so interesting. So viral videos are on blogs, which are people's personal or professional logs, like a little diary. You know, people are making comments. They're becoming very, very popular, as you know. And there was a blog by these two girls who were reality TV writers, and the name of the site is GoFugYourself, F-U-G.com. And they were talking about different styles of the stars and what they're wearing on a daily basis. And it had such a broad audience that these two girls got invited to host one of the award ceremonies just from their blog. And now they have sponsors. I mean, it went from zero to all these people watching, hundreds of thousands of people watching this comments that they wrote because they were very good writers. and vlogs, which are video logs. People go out and shoot videos and actually create news. I mean, it looks like it's a news commentator, but it's everyday people shooting their own videos. And then word of mouth became word of web. And so things are moving along in the Internet. And if you're not doing that, you really should be looking at how the Internet can help market your business, company, or service. You should be looking at that. Be curious. If you're not curious, become curious. Start looking at Wall Street Journal, the marketplace section. Read the Sunday New York Times if you're not doing it. Follow trends in fashion. Follow trends in music, electronics, games, and gadgets. Watch shows like, I mean, you know, a lot of these reality shows that you see, you say, well, I'm not interested. Watch it anyway. A Project Runway. Why? Because they give them very creative problems to solve. And they have to create fashion maybe out of garbage bags or out of discarded materials or very limiting. Go to a shopping supermarket and go whatever's in a supermarket, what you have to make a dress out of. You say, well, who cares? Well, you should care because fashion is the dictate of what the new colors are, what the styles are in graphic design. Fashion leads the way. And if you don't think that's true, take a look at what's happened in everyday products. Go in your kitchen and probably, your mom probably had like maybe a stainless steel toaster or something or a black toaster, but today you could have a toaster in orange, green, purple. If you notice, you can have scissors in green, yellow, fuchsia. You can have paper clips in any color you want, staplers in any color you want. That whole color thing changed, and it became stylish and chic to have colors in your office and colors in your kitchen. It became very, very fashionable. And Apple picked that up by having, you know, the iMac in colors. They said, we don't have to have a putty or a gray or a beige computer. We could have computers in colors. Well, look at the colors they chose, and they were fashion-related. So start noticing trends because that'll make you a lot more savvy to what's happening in the market. And if you're developing logos, I highly recommend you know about colors and their color meanings. It's one thing to just, you know, pick colors that are current, but really you should look at colors and think about what they say about your company. And trends in music, what's happening musically, because you might be developing jingles or background music for your videos or whatever you're doing. Games and gadgets, what's happening because online games are very big now. GetTheGlass.com with Milk. That Milk has a campaign, GetTheGlass.com, and you can go, it's very, very fun and interactive game that you can play online. It's like the last glass of milk in the world, and you have to go get it, and very, very engaging. So online games are very big, and advertising on games is very big. So be aware of that. Okay, take a look at the language of your audience. How does your audience speak? If they speak in casual terms, then your language should be casual. A perfect example of that is the Budweiser Was Up campaign. And you say, oh my gosh, that became so popular. Well, the Was Up language actually came from someone who was shooting a documentary about young guys. And when the agency heard the footage, and the guys are going, what's up, just chilling, they actually took that language and used it in the commercial. That's how it happened, not the other way around. And a lot of people are saying, you know, what's up? And if you go back and think about Where's the Beef and that language from a long time ago, Where's the Beef campaign with Sarah Peller and Wendy's, the Where's the Beef became very big, like, you know, what are you giving me? Everything is there. You're not giving me a full portion. And Where's the Beef became vernacular everyday language. So sometimes campaigns launch into everyday language from hearing what the people say, and the other way around, people hear what the advertiser is saying and they pick it up. Just like the emoticons and the text messaging. Emoticons are those little happy smiley faces as well as the text messaging. That's the language of the young person. And if you have, if you're sitting and you see your daughter or son write, type in POS, that means parent over shoulder. So you'll know that that's their language. So if you're talking to the teens, speak in their language. Be authentic. Tell the truth. The reason the smoking campaign was so big with American Legacy Foundation and the Arnold Group and Crispin Porter Bogusky was because it told the truth. It showed body bags. It showed people dying. It showed the lies that the tobacco industry said. And the audience really bought into it, and it did reduce teen smoking because instead of lecturing, it told them the truth. Here's the truth of it. The truth is we've been lying to you all these years. So if you can be honest and truthful with your audience, authenticity really does speak volumes to the audience. And looking at being responsive, how does your product, service, company, whatever it is you're doing, how does it fill the need of the end user? And I ask you this because the iPod first had people love to take music with them, then they like to take images with them, and then it moved on to file transfers and episodes, and they realized what the need was of the audience, and the product was responsive to the need. And that's what really is developed one at a time when you're relevant and responsive to their needs. The next thing you need to think about is being relevant, understand their values. Okay, what's important to your end user? What do they value? What is it that they would spend more for because they really want this, because they really have an understanding of what it is that they want? And we're going to come to the difference between value, feature, and benefit in a minute. But in understanding what they value, the reason that's important is if you know what they value, they really want their pictures with them, they'll spend $399 to take their pictures with them. If I said to you, I'm going to give you a portable picture book for $400, you would have laughed at me. But the fact is, the iPod understood, the Apple people understood that, yeah, you'll pay that to take it with you. And to have a huge volume, a gigantic picture book with you, your photo album, you would spend $400. If I said that to you 5 years before iPod came out, you'd probably laugh at me, say I'm crazy. Just like Febreze, people would say, who's going to spend money to get the odor out of the air with all the odor deodorizers we have out? Well, this is different. It really does remove the odor in the air, and also in fabric. It really takes it away. It doesn't mask it. So understanding they want the odor gone and not masked, that was a need, and the product was developed out of that need. Another thing that's really important today is to be invisibly visible, meaning don't be obvious, right? Supported the MTV parties by being there and not running commercials. They were just there at the MTV parties. Sprite was everywhere. They were passing out Sprite beverages, and Sprite was just physically present without being obvious. Now, some of the product placements you know are very, very obvious, but some of them are less obvious than you'd realize. You're like, oh, I didn't even notice that that was there. For instance, very obvious was the Castaway movie with Tom Hanks and FedEx. Federal Express, very obvious that they were, you know, he was a FedEx driver, delivery person, I think it was a high-end executive or something from FedEx, and the point was he had a package, and the whole thing was all about FedEx, and yeah, it was more than product placement. I mean, the movie was almost written around it. And things that are less obvious where there'll be a product there, and it's the right product for the film or the movie or the TV episode, it's appropriate that that product is there, and it's not quite as obvious. So being less obvious today is a benefit. You would think it would be more important to be more obvious, but it's not. Look at how years ago when advertisers advertised, these were the three main areas, the product story about how it was made, you know, this is how we make our car, this is how we, you know, build our houses, this is everything was about how it was made. Then the benefit story, which still is important, how the product helped you, you know, what this product does for you. And that's still important, of course, and how something is made is still important. And then the company and the CEO story was important, the Chrysler and Lee Iacocca, if you can find a better car, buy it. Wendy's with Dave Thomas, and Dave Thomas was so embedded with Wendy's. When Dave Thomas passed, Wendy's had a problem with their identity because they couldn't find a spokesperson as authentic as Dave Thomas. And it really affected the company. It was very difficult for them to proceed without Dave Thomas. And likewise, KFC and the Colonel, they were bonded together for many, many years and launched the company and so on and so on. And looking at companies like Carvel and the Carvel guy, you know, you can hear his gravelly voice if you ever heard the old commercial. So the past focus was product story, benefit story, company and CEO story. And looking at that, the question now becomes, if that was the past focus, what's the present focus? And in asking what the present focus is, what do you think the present focus is? Does someone want to type in what they think the present focus is? If that was the past focus, anybody want to give a guess? It was the product. It was the benefit. It was the company. Anybody want to guess what the focus today really is, the main focus today? Nobody guessing? I'll give you one more second to guess. One more second. The member. Yes. What's in it for me? Yes, you're correct. You're 100% correct. The next focus is WIFMs. What's in it for me? Exactly. The consumer is the star. The focus now, excellent, is what's in it for me. Everything today is about the consumer. You say, well, I don't know if that's true. Well, it is true. And how can I be sure? I'm going to tell you in 2 seconds. But first, I want to be sure that you know the difference between these three things. The benefit, what's in it for me, which is still critically important because it's all about you, the consumer. And the word benefit has an I in it. So it's I, all about me. The feature has an R in it. And that's the only one of the three words that has an R, and the word product and trait has an R in it. So you remember feature is the product. Feature is something about the product. So if you're a pizza place and you deliver fast, you'd say fast delivery. For the benefit, that means you don't go hungry. But the feature would be we deliver fast. The value has the letter U in it. So what's it worth to you? And when I say what's it worth to you, what are you willing to spend? So the question becomes, will you spend more for something than you have to because you want it now? Let's say there's something you need research, or you need to get some information, or you have to buy an article online you have to pay for. Would you pay for it rather than look it up and go to the library? Chances are you might, because if you need it now, you'll be willing to pay for it. So that's what value is. What are you willing to pay for something? What's it worth to you? And at some point in your life, you will pay more for something than you have to, and you won't care. The problem is, if you tell the wrong person, hey, you know, I bought this great painting, and I spent whatever, $3,000, and someone says, yeah, well, you know, they're going to have a sale pretty soon at that gallery I always go to, and you could have probably bought a similar painting, you know, for less. That's the wrong person to talk to, because they don't understand value. You wanted that painting up in your living room now. You didn't want to wait for the sale in a month. So the person to talk to about that is someone who understands that you'll pay more for it today because it's worth more to you today, and that's what you need. So these three things you need to think about when you're developing your marketing, because in looking at this, am I going to focus on the benefit? Am I going to talk more about the product? Or am I going to talk more about what it's worth to you? And deciding that will help you differentiate your message and define what you're trying to say. So when I said the consumer, and you agree that the consumer drives the message, how do I know that the consumer drives the message? Well, let's take a look. Diet. Years ago, you'd go on a diet, and you couldn't eat anything. You'd go to a restaurant, and they had no food for you. Here's your salad, and that was it. If you were on a vegetarian diet, they gave you a pasta primavera, and that was it. I mean, there were no other choices today if you're on a diet, whether it's a low carb or an Atkins or a low fat or a South Beach or an East Beach or a North Beach or whatever beach it is or whatever diet you're on. Chances are when you go to a restaurant, the chef has all kinds of choices to accommodate you. So all of a sudden, you, the consumer on a diet, are just as important as the regular customer who comes into the restaurant. That's a major, major shift. In fact, many restaurants even have Atkins cheesecake as dessert. And you might say, oh, you know, that's true. There is Atkins cheesecake. Well, that's huge. That's a huge shift. It isn't just sugar-free or low-fat. It's a specific dessert that somebody on the Atkins diet can actually have it. Okay, look at music to go. The MP3 player existed. MP3 players existed before the iPod. The technology was out. But here's the question. MP3 wasn't cool, but iPod was. So that whole question of, gee, your music to go, but iPod is such a cool product, and everybody wants to be cool, that whole cool factor factored in. So not only just having the technology isn't enough, just having the technology is just the beginning. You have to have more than that. You have to be sure that what you're offering to the end user is something that they want to integrate into their lifestyle. Likewise, minivans. Minivans became very responsive to the woman who is now the soccer mom. Now, the soccer mom used to be a cool person. I mean, she was probably, you know, she might have been a cheerleader. She could have been the prom queen, whatever it was. She was cool. And all of a sudden she gets married, has a kid, and now she's a soccer mom. In response to the soccer mom, one of the minivan companies developed a minivan with a configuration like an L in the back. So all they did was shift one row of seats from horizontal to vertical, and it creates an L just like a limousine. And so now you can have a limousine configuration in the back of your minivan. So how cool is that? Well, the kids' soccer gear goes in the middle, and the kids line up just like they're in a limousine. This whole thing about developing products that are responsive to you, the consumer, is something that's very big now. Just like the low-fat, no-fat, trans carbs, no carbs. If you look at the low-fat and the fat-free and all the products on the shelves, look what's out there. This whole thing, if you just go shopping, you'll see mile after mile of products that didn't exist 5 years ago. Why? Because you said, I'm on this special diet, I want it. You said, I need my iPod to do the following, not just this, that, and the other thing, but more. The more you demanded, the more the products came out in response to you. So ask yourself, okay, how does the product make you mobile? Look at the PDAs. Look at your laptops. Look at the Bluetooth. Look at your Wi-Fi. Look at your cell phones. Look at combined technology, how multimedia phones came out, organizer phones came out. All these things came out, and, of course, you know, if you realize what's going on with the iPod and you can do all these other things, not only just bring your pictures and your music, you know, about episodes, you can watch TV on your iPod. This whole thing is how to let you take whatever you need wherever you are. And so there's a whole shift, a physical space shift as to where you're getting your messages, that you want your messages, your news, whatever it is, wherever you want to be. There's a shift in where you're getting your content. And looking at how to make your product or service fun. Everybody loves fun. That's why the subservient chicken is so funny. And that's why seeing the scuba cat, and there's also a cat that plays the piano. Her owner, the cat's owner, is a piano teacher, and there's a video of a cat playing the piano. And it's amazing how the cat plays and listens to what she, I mean, it's, when you see it, you will not believe it. Go Google piano playing cat and you'll see. And so that is like the most amazing thing. So how can your product or service make your audience feel cool? Okay. Ringtones. Who would believe you're going to pay for a special ring on your telephone? Wallpaper. Blogs, as we mentioned before. Podcasts, where you could get your message out through podcasts. Blogs. And blogs are personal logs. Amazon started with blogs, personal logs, where you can talk more about a personal profile. And it's called a blog. And high-tech cell phones, which now you know you can get even episodes and all kinds of things on your cell phone, including coupons from advertisers. You can opt in to get coupons from advertisers on your cell phone. And how much fun is it to text message, especially when you leave your parents out of it? And iPods, where you can now transfer your music, your pictures, your files, and TV episodes. So how this whole fun thing happened and cool, the cool factor, is really, really, really important. So if you can do anything that's fun and cool and mobile, I mean, you're really moving into what's happening tomorrow. Okay, let's look at the number one company in the world for customer service in the travel industry, and that is Ritz-Carlton. Now, why do I say that to you? I'm going to ask you in a minute, who's the number one store? So you can type in your answer, who's the number one store for customer service? Think about that. So let's go back to the Ritz-Carlton customer profiling. You call up the Ritz, and you ask for a room, and you want a room that has, let's say, I want to have flowers in the room, and I want to have wine chilled, I want to have cheese and fruit when I come up. And the next time you reserve a room at the Ritz, they're going to ask you, do you want wine, do you want cheese and fruit in the room? I mean, what is it that you want? And they'll have it ready for you because they customer profile, and they even reach you by name when you come in. Well, the Hilton is trying to do that, and the Hilton is having a customer card. So when you go into the bar and you tell the bartender what you want, they'll write a little card for you, and the next time you come in, they'll have that drink ready. If you say to the bartender, I like this drink, I want it every time I come in, they'll have it ready for you. So Ritz-Carlton is number one for customer service in the hotel industry. And which store is number one for retail for customer service? I don't see anybody answering me, and I'm going to ask you one more time. Can you name the store that's number one for customer service in the world? Yep, Nordstrom's. You're correct. It is Nordstrom's. And what Nordstrom's does, can't be Walmart, that's funny. What Nordstrom's does is they have personal shoppers. And probably those of you who knew Nordstrom's know that if you go in to Nordstrom's, they will hold clothing for you before the sale. They'll hold it in a specific color, in your style, in your size. They'll hold it for a special event. And they'll call you and say, guess what, this blue blouse that you were looking at or black slacks that you were looking at is going on sale next week. I'll hold it for you in your size. What a wonderful thing. I mean, they don't worry when people return things that they don't even sell, which is true, or people buy things and use them and wear them and bring them back. They don't care. Why? Because they're known for customer service. And that one blouse or whatever that you wore, dress, it's not important enough for them to worry about something that they don't even sell that you're returning. They're more involved and focused on what it is that they can do for you to make you come back. Because the rule of 250, if you're unhappy, you'll tell 250 people. But if you're happy, chances are you'll just come back, and they'd rather you come back than talk about them. So, yes, you're right about Nordstrom's. It's known for customer service. And think about what made them so successful. If you can be useful to your audience, if your service could help them in some way to succeed, like weight loss, Subway with Jared Fogel. He was a regular guy. He was not a paid endorser. He was a regular guy who, without diet pills or anything else, just decided to try Subway and just look for the healthy choices on the menu. And he really did this on his own. He went on a diet with Subway, and he did lose all that weight. He was a regular person. That's what made it so credible. Well, Weight Watchers contacted Whoopi Goldberg, and she lost weight. And so she, you know, she looks better, and she's saying, hey, why don't you do this? And Jenny Craig used Kirstie Alley, and she's still losing weight. And you can see Valerie Bertinelli is there, and she's on a diet also. So if you can get a star, and they can show, gee, this product really helped me succeed, and it isn't just that they're paying for it, but they really are losing the weight. You can't say I lost weight and you didn't. You can't Photoshop out 100 pounds. I mean, they really have to lose it. Then you're seeing that it really does help them succeed. So that's something you need to look at. And ask yourself, how can you be a partner? How can you help them succeed financially? If your company is a financial company, like credit consolidation, online banking, H&R Block. And I'm going to ask you a question. If I were to say to you, how could H&R Block do something very creative and use their name in an innovative way and reach their audience in a new way, what kind of media do you think you could use for H&R Block that they haven't really thought about or used in the past? I'll give you a second to type something in. I mean, how could you get the word out about H&R Block and income tax filing? What way would you promote their services? How would you project this image of we can help you with your taxes? Let's see what you come up with. Go ahead and type in an answer that you think would be helpful to promote tax return filing and the assistance that they can give you for income tax. What would you do with H&R Block if you had the opportunity to do something innovative, to do something creative? Use the blocks on a sidewalk in a busy part of town. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Put blocks on a sidewalk in a busy part of town. I think that's fabulous. I love your idea. Now, you'd say, well, gee, that's such a creative idea. Why didn't they think of something like that? I don't know, but I think it's a great idea. They could also do a giant vehicle, air-conditioned, giant-size, oversized vehicle that they could take to your block and have the H&R Block party and have come around to you in your neighborhood, and H&R is on the block. And you could actually line up and go do your taxes right there rather than you having to go to H&R Block. I don't know why they don't do that. And have an H&R Block party in different parts of the city. You bring your taxes, and instead of having to show up, you just come in. You could make an appointment. They could plan when they're going to have it. But the idea of having blocks on the sidewalk is another fabulous idea. Or even kiosks with blocks where people could come in. It's just a very good idea. The whole idea of coming out to where people are. It's called today out of home advertising. It used to be outdoor, but it's out of home because today it's mobile phones, it's interactive, billboards on Times Square, it's all kinds of things. But your answer about using blocks on a sidewalk is very creative, and I love that idea. It's very strong. You could even have blocks that say something. It could also be kiosks where you can get a coupon to make an appointment or save 10% or something. Definitely. Okay, if you can be playful, that's another thing you could do with your audience. You could create and engage them in some kind of an inside joke, like the Altoids. Now, the box on Altoids says, curiously strong mints. That's what it says. So when Leo Burnett Agency was trying to develop a campaign, they just looked at the box and they said, you know what? That is the campaign. We don't have to come up with a campaign. There it is. And the way they're very creative and the way their visuals are, some of their visuals are very, very creative. And it says strong Altoids. And it shows a picture of a guy with full muscles and he looks like a bodybuilder. And it says nice Altoids in the print ad. Very, very creative. So, because you know, it's not Altoids when the guy's physically built. It's different type of muscles, but they use the word Altoids to look like it's strong. And exaggerating the product effect is another technique that they do with inside jokes. And people just love those campaigns. They just really, really love them. And visually, they're so interesting. So they're playful, and they play back with the audience, which helps the audience participate and feel like they're part of the Altoids. And can you be a friend? People buy from people, not just companies. Or can you make the audience feel like you've established a relationship, that you're doing something one-on-one? Can you think of a company that you feel like you have a relationship with that company, even if you really don't have a relationship? Is there any company that makes you feel like, no, I got to have my whatever that product is, and you're not going to give that up? And if there's a product that you're really loyal to, whether it's Coke or Pepsi, or whether it's a deodorant that you use, or a certain pen that you like, somebody said Tide. Okay, you have a relationship with Tide because they've either gotten your stains out and they haven't damaged your fabric. There's something that you have found with Tide that you can trust them, and trust is a big factor in a relationship. So there's something about, my mom uses Tide. Someone else said Starbucks. That's a brilliant answer, Starbucks, yes. What does Starbucks sell? They don't sell coffee. What do they sell? What does Starbucks sell? Yeah, they have their coffee and their cake, and you can take the coffee to go. But what is it that they're really selling? Overpriced latte. They're selling an experience. That's what they're selling. What they came up with was you have two places, home and office, and Starbucks decided to create a third place, your other place, and they became your other place. So the thing with a relationship with Starbucks is, you said, well, gee, I can go to Starbucks and have another place to be. Interesting to tell you that Starbucks also went into areas that were urban areas where the income was much lower than where you'd expect a lot of Starbucks. And I ask you, why would they go to an area where $4 or $5 for a cup of coffee was so expensive, and yet they'd go into an area where that would be a very, very high-priced item for anybody over there to afford? Why would they go there? What could they possibly offer that audience and that neighborhood? Let's see if you have an answer to that question. Let's see if you can think of a reason they'd go to an area where that would be a stretch, because they care about everyone. Goodwill. Actually, it's a brilliant answer. That is a really good answer, by the way. The reason they did it, however, the Goodwill goes a little deeper. What they did was, and you're in the right direction, they wanted to provide a destination. So people could take, young kids could take their girlfriend out to a nice place and with a limited budget, and you could go to Starbucks for the evening, and it became like you get dressed up and go to Starbucks. I know maybe to a lot of people that's not a destination, but for that audience and that neighborhood, it solved a problem about looking nice and going out and going on a date, and you can talk to somebody, you can spend the whole evening there. So it became a place to go. And so it's very, very interesting. While Starbucks was answering that need, guess what Dunkin' Donuts did? They went the other way around, and they started offering latte and espresso and all this other stuff, all these other beverages at a lower price than Starbucks, because they were catering to the construction worker, you know, the everyday worker, the guy that spends, you know, all day on the road, and he wants something nice to drink too, but he doesn't want to spend $4 or $5 on a drink. So they went the other way around and started offering beverages similar to Starbucks at a more affordable price. They also broadened their menu, in case you didn't notice, and they're offering all kinds of things because they also want to create a relationship. So who's the relationship built around for Dunkin' Donuts? And what is their current slogan? Who is the relationship for, and what is the current slogan for Dunkin' Donuts? Let's see if you remember Dunkin' Donuts' new slogan. Let's take a look and see if you remember what it is. I mean, really, who is going to Dunkin' Donuts? Waiting to see. American. Yes, American runs on Dunkin'. Great. That is their slogan. So what is that? That includes everybody. It's a much broader stroke. Everyone runs on Dunkin', meaning you need your coffee and a donut. And so it's a broad, very exciting slogan because it's so inclusive and allows everyone to feel like they're part of America. So it's a very, very great slogan, and it's one that engages the audience. Okay, give me another advertiser where you feel a special relationship. Or somebody that, okay, here's one. Here's a question. If you were to compare Pampers, yeah, Pampers, you do have a relationship with Pampers because you feel like you can trust them and that they can, they really protect the baby. That's exactly where I was headed, Mac Computer. And Chipotle, yeah, Chipotle. Another one is a female store. I don't want to come back to Mac Computers. There's a female store, Chico, where that store, there's a certain audience that goes to Chico's and loves the product, and they really understand that audience. It's a middle-aged woman who likes to look unique. She likes to wear unusual clothing. She likes to wear jewelry that defines who she is, and artistic type of clothing, artsy types of clothing. So that Chico's really went to and spoke to a specific audience. Let's go back to Mac Computers. Because Mac and PC, when you talk about building a relationship, and I'm so happy you brought that one up. When you look at Mac is the cool guy. And the PC is what? He's like the nerdy guy. And have you noticed the latest commercials where Mac has a genius, and then the PC goes, a genius? And they start asking her all kinds of questions, you know, the square root of this and that. And, you know, how much do I hate Mac out of 1 to 10? And she goes, 11. Oh, she is good. Well, that whole thing about being cool, and we talked about the cool factor being so important. This is a key question. I mean, that's how Mac Computers, where they have a very tiny percent of the market. What percent of the market do you think Mac Computers has? Type in a number. If you were to say, what percent do you think perceptively? You think it's 10%, 5%. You're right, it's 4%. It's 4%. Can you believe Mac is only 4% of the market? And look at the impact it has. It's probably growing now. It's probably even more than 4%. But looking at that, you say, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe that something that small is taking on the big gun, meaning PC, and yet they really are speaking to the audience saying, guess what, we do all these cool things. And, you know, Mac was designed from the creative mind, meaning designers and graphic people and advertising people tend to gravitate toward the Mac because it thinks like a creative person, whereas the PC is more linear, and even the way it stores its files is very linear, so it responds to how a linear thinker processes the information. All right, who else do you have a relationship with? I mean, do some of you really feel like I'm not giving up my Coke or my Pepsi? Anybody have a beverage that they're really, or a water that they're really tied to? But let me ask you this. What? Diet Pepsi. Yeah, and they say Diet Pepsi, you know, has more flavor than Diet Coke. Yeah, I understand the Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi thing. Lipton iced tea. What about Snapple? My kids used to knew about McDonald's when they were barely able to speak. Well, McDonald's is famous for having a very kid-friendly environment, by the way. And that's one of the selling points. And the relationship is you can go to McDonald's and it's usually a safe environment. They have the outdoor playground that's all enclosed in so the kids can't get lost. And it's very, very family-friendly. And they were voted like the number one in the country for family friendliness. The Golden Arches. Yeah, you know, the Golden Arches, exactly. And in looking at building a relationship, McDonald's always stayed true to their audience and realized that moms want to come in with their kids, and if they make a mess, who cares? And we want to get them in and out, and we want to have a playground where they have fun. And also, in PlayStations, they changed from playground to PlayStations, exactly. That's a good point that now they have PlayStations for the kids. But let's look at Ronald McDonald. Not only do they talk about how we can take care of you at home, they also talk to the families who are in trouble and families who have terrible crises with health. And the Ronald McDonald houses help parents stay with children who need special treatment. And so they've really extended their reach, and that was for a long, long time that they've been out, not just come to visit with us when you're well, but we're there even when you're not well. So they really, really built a deep relationship in the marketplace with families. And so looking at that, that's very important to understand that perhaps you need to develop a stronger feeling between your company and your audience where you really have a deep relationship where they're not going to give that up so quickly. And look at what Propel did. It's water with vitamins. And look at what vitamin water. Look at the name, vitamin water. I mean, you know, it's like ridiculously clear what this product has. And the relationship is everyone's drinking water. Well, what if we put vitamins in our water? It became a huge success just because the name really spoke to the audience. And the audience was very careful and concerned about what they were doing with their health. And so they came up with a product that responded to their needs, understood their values, and took a simple, clear message and said, we have vitamin in our water. Okay, so let's take a look and say, in looking to create a relationship, you want to be ready when you're developing your messages, when you're developing whether it's an online video or whether you're developing a website or whether you're developing an e-zine. Everything that you're doing, you want to create a creative weapons so that you can, when you're focused on your message, you can create street smart advertising so that you can win the battle of the buzz. So I want to allow questions now, because some of you might have some questions that you'd like to ask me either about messages you're developing, and I wanted to allow enough time for questions. So I see a question. Let me go back up so I can get this whole question. I only see the second half of it. Many companies have proven that they can produce cool, innovative marketing that appeals to their audience. Have you seen anything like this in the banking industry? Yeah, Bank of America. Bank of America is kind of saying what Visa said for many years. Everywhere you want to be, Bank of America is on every corner. So what's innovative about that is that when you're traveling, if you're at an airport, wherever you are, if you're looking to do some banking, they're where you need to be. So I do think the banking industry, I think Bank of America has really done that. I know Wachovia is working on, you know, looking cool and products and, you know, affordability. But I think Bank of America is really focused on how to make ourselves more accessible to you in your busy life. And this is WAMU. I'm not clear what that is. I'm not familiar with that. Is that – oh, that's Wachovia. Isn't that Wachovia? Washington Mutual. Washington Mutual, yes. Washington Mutual has done some very innovative things. When I saw WAMU, I'm going, what is that? Yeah, Washington Mutual. They are doing some innovative advertising. I don't think it's easy in banking to be innovative. With banking, you want to be trustworthy. You want to be available. You want to have easy access. You want to offer them service. You want to make sure it's cost savings and that you're very responsible. Let me go back up and see what this comment is. Chase is doing a real great job with their new commercials, the Faster ATM group of guys in the car at the light bedding and the Mary Tyler Moore girl with all the online services. Yes, that is true. And that, let me see, that was Chase. Chase is doing a good job with that, with the Mary Tyler Moore girl. And you need to update me on Umpqua. I'm not familiar with that one. That one you got me. I don't know what that one is. I could be my part of the neighborhood down here in Southeast. I didn't see that campaign. I did see the Washington Mutual one, but this one doesn't ring a bell. So I don't know what that campaign is. So if you type in what it is, we can discuss that. But in looking at what makes a product innovative or what makes a service innovative, I mean, the key question becomes, okay, what are they doing to engage you and involve you and ask for your participation? What are they doing to make you look cool and feel cool? And can you think of any other online games that you've seen? or anything else that you're participating in that's online that's kind of fun to do, where you're telling your friends, gee, you need to go to this website and go see what they have. So I still don't know what WAMQA is. It's a bank in the Northwest. Oh, look at their website. Thank you. I will look at the website. BP Oil. Yeah. They're looking a lot more innovative, aren't they? And so you're able to notice what's innovative in the marketplace, and you're able to see, you know, what's happening that's new and creative and what makes them creative. What I'd like you to do is not just see what's cool and creative, but say what's separating them. What are the qualities about these campaigns that speak volumes about being creative and innovative? And are there any other oil, you said, and you said banking. Are there any other industries that you see that you think are really coming out and saying, gee, I'm really a creative, innovative group? Is there something else about the financial industry? Why don't we look at, talk to Chuck, you know, Charles Schwab at the Schwab Investment House. You know, talk to Chuck, very warm and friendly. And it says the other guys speak and you can't understand what they're saying, but when Charles Schwab speaks, talk to Chuck. So that one was very innovative. Let me look up because somebody just scrolled. I got to go up. Let's see. We did a promotion, a takeoff on a deal or no deal. Oh, that used a scratch-off. That's very clever. Deal or no deal with a scratch-off. That's very creative because a lot of people are familiar with deal or no deal. And scratch-off is fun. It's participatory. People are involved with that. We're involved in developing some focus. Focus groups for Generate X and Y, we think that's the best place to start. Well, focus groups, that's a hard group to, you know, that's a slippery slope. And there was some research recently done and some articles written that I read that were very, very interesting about that audience and how hard it is to reach them and how this whole generational gap, if you look up generational gap, it's very interesting. And they talk about how people who are older workers in the workforce, and they were when they were growing up, coming, you know, young people in the firm, they were coming up, and they expected to work hard, and they expected to earn their place and the promotion. And the young people, the X and Yers, are like, well, you should just retire so I can take your spot. They don't think that they need to earn that spot. They think they know everything. And the other thing that was really, really interesting is that this new audience, this new group of people who are now in the marketplace working, the young new worker, if they have a problem with the boss, this is a fact, this is research, they bring their moms in. And now the HR workers, the people who are in H&R, you know, human resources, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of the human resource workers, the professionals, are getting help because they can't deal with the moms. So they bring their mom in to fight their battle, which is completely unheard of for the generations in the past. So they expect their mom to go to work and talk to the boss on their behalf, but the boss doesn't talk to the mom. The boss sends the two of them up to human resources, and they're so stressed out, they're getting help. So talking to that audience, they think completely differently, and they want to be unique and individual, and you know, they don't want to be grouped together. They're a very complicated audience to reach, and I highly recommend you look at generational differences and how to speak to them. But one thing that they did say, that if you say something to them, you know, about how you can have a day off and that you reward them and you recognize their efforts, everybody responds well to positive statements. And so they did say that across the board, every generation responds well to something very positive and having time off as a reward for the work that they did. So looking at that, just be sure you do some research on the generational gap, because I think that would really help in your language. They talk about speaking the right language to that audience and understanding what they value. Are there any other comments or questions about reaching your audience or media intersection or observational research or any of the language that I use or anything else that you I want to allow time for any more questions about how to do something really creative and innovative. And I invite you to go to YouTube and see what's out. I invite you to wander around to different websites and see what's going on the Coke side. And look at Absolute. And look at Got Milk, because on gotmilk.com you can actually download flyers that are the top 100 Got Ripped Off slogans. Like Got Milk allows a lot of people to steal their slogan because everyone still thinks of milk. So if you look online, you've got a job, got a date, got a friend, got money, got dinero, and they have the top 100 slogans. You can download the poster. So just the fact that you're downloading or engaging or sending in your got ripped off slogans shows a high nature level of participation from the Got Milk campaign, which is the milk processing board in California. Anyone else have any comments or questions? I wanted to be sure to allow time for you because I know some of you have to leave exactly at 3, but I did want to give you a couple of seconds more if you had any more questions. Any advice on starting a member blog? Oh, that's a really good question. Starting a member blog. I love that idea. I think what I would do is find out what do they have in common and ask a question like problem solving. Like, here's something that a lot of us are facing. Please give your comments on how to solve this problem. And people love solving riddles, solving problems. So if there's any way that you could create something where you have like a tips, advice or something, and people type in their advice, it'd be very well read because a lot of people have the same problems. I think that member blogs are brilliant because you face similar issues. And how did you resolve your problem? And how did you? I would definitely do something like that. And also interviews. People love interviews, short interviews. This is what so-and-so said. So I would look at something that talked about skill building or problem solving or interviews for advice because I think people really like to hear how other people in the trenches are solving problems. And I think that's what I would do. And if you could get a video log, if you could, you know, if people want to show how they solve something, that would be great too. But if not, you know, type blog is still good. It's still very, very good. And you put out a question like, can you solve this problem? And give about a week or 2 weeks for people to answer the question and put the answers in. So always post the questions. Just like when you look at, you know, at the any of the books that are out that, you know, Crack the Code and the Da Vinci Code and people are answering codes, people love to solve problems and riddles. Are there any other questions? And blogs are easy. You just type, you know, start typing, and you can make it very simple. You don't have to have it ornate or designed unless you want to. I mean, you can have a designer design it, but you really don't have to. People are there for information. Any other questions? Well, let me just invite you to my webinar series because I have a webinar series that's on Tuesdays, and you can attend from 1 to 2 Eastern Standard Time. And just type in street-smartadvertising.com. And you can come in, and my next 3 sessions are going to be the next one is interactive techniques, and then I'm going to cover on the 29th self-promotions, and then on June 5th, innovative marketing. So those are the next 3 Tuesdays. That'll be my second 6-part series, so you're all invited. And thank you for being here.
Thank you, Margo. I look forward
to talking to you.
Thank you, and that was a lot of good feedback, comments, questions, and it looks as though our attendees are slowly dropping out. So
okay. We're
going to wrap it up for today.
Good.
And before we do that, I just want to thank all the attendees again for showing up today. And hold on, I see Tracy Young has a quick comment.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome. I'm so happy you were here.
Tracy's saying, we are working on developing some focus groups for Gen X and Y. We think that's the
best. Yeah, I answered her.
Any comments? Okay. Thank you. All right. Yeah, and again, thank you very much. And if Margo, is there anything that you kind of wanted to sum up in closing?
I just want to make sure that everybody thinks creatively and doesn't just take the standard, ordinary path, but think about other places, like she said, sidewalks and outdoors and anything you could think of. That's what you're looking for, something that's heart-stopping. In fact, there was a Mr. Clean, and the advertisement was the stripes on the pedestrian stripes for the crosswalks, and one stripe was bright white, and it was Mr. Clean. So any place you can think of to advertise might be a really good place.
Great. Thank you very much, Margo.
You're welcome.
Everybody out there in Credit Union Land, thanks again for showing today, and have a great day.
Thanks.